All right, roleplay level of concern in about a half an hour. We love playing this game with Jonas in here. Jonas Siegel of The Athletic is in here. You've done roleplay before, Jonas.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah, you're pretty good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're confident. You got that Vladdy
swag. Yeah, he
does. Vladdy swag.
It's my house.
Yeah. It's your house. I love that out of Vladdy.
Me too.
I love it. And it's got to be against a team like Boston. You can't do that against Detroit, right? You can't do it against Kansas City or something. It's got to be against Boston. It's got to be a walk-off against the Sox. And you had to call your shot, and you need to yell, this is my house. This is our house. And he owns it, man. And listen, we had that, was it a confirm or deny, I think, yesterday or a couple of days ago, this idea that Alejandro Kirk could fight for a top three spot on the billing of the Blue Jays popularity list. And I think he is right now in the moment. But if we're talking like longevity, I think there's got to be a little bit more. He's still a bit of a novelty act because it's so early into his career.
Right.
But he's up there. But Vladdy's still the king, I think. You know, like Vladdy, I think Bichette. Then
Manoah.
You're talking Springer. You're talking Manoah. Like, that's the debate where Manoah will land in all this because he is a rock star right now in Toronto, and he's on the mound tonight with an opportunity to close. You sweep the Sox, considering how hot Boston was coming in, how much the Jays were really reeling the way that they played those final two games or pitched the final two games in Milwaukee. This would be a big win tonight.
Yeah.
Huge win.
Sweep it up. Yeah, it would be nice. I'd like to see their bats look consistent. Like, I just, Vladdy, walk off all of that. I just want to see him crush some homers. Like, he's still kind of, what's he hovering at, 18?
And yeah. Like, he's having listen, last year, what did he hit, 47? You know, like, that's a big, 46, 47. He's on pace for about 40 home runs, give or take. That's still a great year. And I think by the end of the year, he'll have something like a 950 OPS, 40 home runs. You'll still look at his stats and say, wow. Like that. I think that's a sign of his maturity and his arrival. Last year was such a phenomenal season. But prior to that, there were ups and downs.
Yeah.
But if you're just every year you're expected to go out there and perform, and you continue to do that. Not every year you're going to win the MVP. Not every year you're going to set career numbers. But if you can consistently at the end of the season say he's playing in 150-plus games, which he does, he plays every day, and his numbers are among the best in the league, then you deserve the billing as being one of the best players in the league.
Yeah.
And I think that's where he is.
It's just that Ohtani's following things up with his, like, ridiculous.
He's doing it. Trout's doing it. But they keep losing. You know, like, I don't know if I don't feel bad for those guys. Like, Trout could have left. He was a free agent. He signed the big deal. But they lose all the time. Like, the Angels are,
what are
they, 11 games out of first in the division?
Did you guys see the Trout stuff yesterday?
Tipping pitches, his own pitcher, tipping pitchers, and him telling his dugout, like, hey, what the hell is going on here? Can someone snap out of it?
What do you think that's about? Just like frustration in the moment?
Well, yeah, I think it was
picture?
I think it was a genuine reaction. Like, if he's picking up on it, what the hell's going on in the dugout? You got to remember, like, Madden's out, right? So the guy who was running that dugout, now you got a new skip. You got someone in there that maybe he's trying to find his bearings or what have you, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's a good look.
No,
you shouldn't have
a
center fielder, the guy out there in center who's concentrating on the pitch, also being concerned that the opposition is tipping pitches or picking up on what's being tipped.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're 12 and a half back. They're 36 and 41. Yet Mike Trout's a stud. Ohtani's maybe going to win MVP again. And they're 12 and a half back of Houston. And I don't think they're not going to make the playoffs again.
Yeah.
Well, that's the life story of Mike Trout in the majors, man. That's the team you're on, and I don't think they're going to help him. But anyway, role play level of concern in about 25 minutes. And Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, will join us here in a moment. We mentioned the Kevin Fiala deal.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how many people know Fiala up here. Like, if you're a big hockey fan, you know who he is.
Like him.
Yeah, he had a really good year in Minnesota. He was an RFA, I believe. And Minnesota has traded his rights to L.A. in exchange for a 2022 first-round pick and a prospect. And now the reports are out there that L.A. has already agreed to a deal 7 years at like $7.9 million per year.
Well, he's
a big
if you
commitment.
Look at his last 3 years, like, because of his games played, you have to go to, you know, points per game, all that. Like, you know, he was a 65 to 70 point guy the two previous years and had 83, and he's just turned, he's 25 years old. Like, he's, I think he's a really good player. Like, mm-hmm. really good. And Minnesota, I don't think they wanted to get rid of him. It's just they're,
they can't
they're
sign anyone.
Cap hell.
Isn't
they're
this the penalty from the Parise and Suter?
I think Jonas, yeah. Jonas, it's 2 or 3 years. Is it not the penalty? Like,
it's,
I think it's 12 million.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see where it's really high. Yeah.
They're very high. I think
7
the first
point. Actually, no, it's like 14.6 this year.
Yeah, 14
just
and 14
dead money.
And then scales down after that. But, like, the next 2 years are going to be quite lean. Minnesota is going to have to find value contracts for sure.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, you miss out, you lose on a guy like Fiala because Suter and Parise had to be bought
for
out.
Other teams.
They're just not even playing for you anymore. Joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger. Is that your read on this situation, Dregs, that Bill Guerin and the Wild are just so screwed because of those buyouts that they just have to dump players effectively?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. It's 100% cap related, and it's harsh. But, you know, there is a hockey element to this, and the hockey element is, you know, remember to the early days of Kevin Fiala, not that long ago, where he was in the doghouse with Dean Evason, didn't seem like he was going to get out, and then they found a way to coexist, a little tough love, maybe. Fiala learned, and he flourished, absolutely flourished. So, you know, I'm looking at the Minnesota Wild and Billy Guerin, and I'm looking at some of the holes that they have in the lineup and some of the guys that they want to dig down and keep. They would love to have Cam Talbot and Marc-Andre Fleury together as a tandem again. You know, what does the Fleury deal look like? You know, it's going to be short term just based on where Fleury is. But they've got to wrestle with that, you know, and there's no certainty that Marc-Andre Fleury wants to come back to Minnesota, even though he will acknowledge that he enjoyed his time there and felt like he was needed and felt like there was further opportunity. Jake Middleton is another piece that Bill Guerin and the Minnesota Wild acquired that they've got to deal with. You know, Middleton is a real nice add. He's a depth guy defensively, but he can play up a little bit, high character individual. You're looking at a 3-year term, probably just north of $2 million. Doesn't sound like a lot, you know, when you're looking at pieces like that. But when you're scrapped because of the cap penalties that you're paying for Suter and Parise, those are the decisions that become bigger decisions and encourage you to move a real important and productive piece like Kevin Fiala.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I mean, that's a big deal he gets immediately, right? Like 7 years at $7.9 million. The stats, like you were pointing out, Noodles, would indicate that's the value,
yeah.
And if LA wants to go get him. But that kind of feels like a deal that's projecting the cap to be going up, Dregs.
Yeah.
In a couple of years. And what does it do for other value contracts around the league, you know, where guys are good players and they're on good deals, and maybe those are worth that much more now when you consider what Fiala just got paid.
Right. Could be, Brian. And I, you know, I haven't seen the breakdown year by year. I don't know if it's been posted yet. But I'd be curious on that, and I'm going to be really curious on the structure of some of the deals that we're going to see this summer in free agency. The commissioner's office has done a real good job in continuing to advise NHL clubs of what their belief is and how the cap is going to escalate and, you know, when the players will have paid back into the system so the escrow can start coming down. And the player agents are, as designed, going to likely try and take advantage of that, right? Like, why would you front load big, heavy contracts if you're thinking that, you know, the player share is going to get paid back within the next 3-4 years, whatever that timeline is, and you're paying less in the escrow. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see what the structure of some of these contracts looks like, but it also does speak to the health of the league with the salary cap undoubtedly going up, and, you know, how that's going to afford certain teams, players, player agents, et cetera, opportunity to try and take advantage of it.
Dregs, we had a pretty good debate about goaltenders in the 4 o'clock hour, just basically talking about the marketplace. And You know, obviously, it's a hot button topic here in Toronto. I think it's a hot button topic in Edmonton. I was on Edmonton Radio this morning. You know, throughout the league, do you sense that this is you know, maybe a more? I know goaltending is always focused on, but maybe this summer a little bit more, just based on either the availability of guys and maybe the market being not as sexy on paper.
No question about that. I had a couple of player agents independently tell me yesterday that they've had conversations with Players Association over the last few years projecting that the goalie market was softening, that it was going to get to a place that was going to be concerning. Is it there now? I don't know, Noodle, if you tell me. I look at the goalie market now, and I don't see a lot that would, you know, get my blood or my heart beating at a faster pace, given what's going to be available on the open market. I mean, we can look at Jack Campbell, obviously. You can look at Billy Huso, who, you know, the St. Louis Blues would like to keep. They would like to keep him. Question is, can they afford both Billy Huso and Jordan Bennington? And then you look at Edmonton's situation. Well, Edmonton has interest in Huso. But what's Mike Smith going to do? You know, is Mike Smith going to opt out and retire, spend time with his family? Then what does Edmonton do if Huso signs? And on and on and on it goes. The market is weak for goaltenders as far as NHL teams are concerned, especially those who are interested in change or interested in upgrade. You know, I keep hearing about, you know, the Maple Leafs and just willingness to be patient and not necessarily fully engaged with Jack Campbell. I'm not so sure that's the smart approach here. You know, if Jack Campbell isn't Toronto's guy, you know, quote unquote, then who is? And how do you acquire that guy unless you're willing to one more time overpay? And I, you know, I use Toronto because we're talking a Toronto market here, but you could say that about Edmonton. You could say that potentially about Las Vegas, and you could say that about a lot of other teams. The goalie market is not a strong one this year.
Well, Dregs, you said that the PA, I guess, was concerned about the goaltending market softening. What do you mean by that? Like, not enough good goalies available, or? Like,
yeah, no, I want to hang this on the PA, Brian. It was more of a conversation that player agents raised with the Players Association. There's nothing the PA can do about it. I mean, goalies are either developing and they're drafted and they develop into good NHL goalies or they don't. It's just, I think that collectively the hockey world could forecast that maybe this was coming, and I don't know that it's crisis. Again, I look around the NHL and I'm not going to lie, 2 years ago, I didn't know who Billy Huso was. I didn't, and now we're talking about him as, how old is he, 26, 27?
Yeah,
you know, and here's a guy that's in a perfect position to get the contract that, you know, I guess he deserves, you know, I mean, based on play. But if you're in a strong goalie market, even though Billy Huso's coming off a good year with the St. Louis Blues, does he have the same type of leverage that he has right now? And I think the hard answer to that is no. How could he? So that maybe speaks to the conversation the agents were having with the Players Association, as opposed to maybe I worded it improperly in saying that the PA had concerns. It's just a reality of how agents were projecting where we were getting to at this point.
Well, right. Guys, I wonder if it's the price point, because like you've got those three guys at the top that are making like $10.5 million.
Yeah.
And then it's like there's a big drop, and then it's like John Gibson at 6'4". And it doesn't seem like any team is ever, I mean, maybe not ever, but like a team is not going to pay more than 6 or 6.5 for a goalie in the foreseeable future. Dregs, you think that's maybe it?
Yeah, I think that's it, Jonas. I do. And, you know, it's interesting you throw John Gibson's name into that mix just in terms of virtue of salary. And there's been enough trade speculation around John Gibson. That's kind of faded of late, and it should, because he doesn't seem to want to move, and I don't think Anaheim has any interest in moving him. But because of his price point, if Pat Verbeek were ever to consider moving Gibson, then I think the market would swell in a hurry. Because of the quality of goaltender he is, and where his price point is. And when you look at some of the other goalies that are entering the market now in terms of the free agent market, and Jack is in that category, Jack Campbell, that's the problem that Toronto, I think, has and other teams might have. But if Campbell goes to open market, you know, is he going to get $6 million? He probably will get $6 million. Oh, he probably will. Yeah.
Well, wow.
That's
if
a
he
big
does,
ticket.
Yeah, good for him, though, right? Like, you got to strike when the iron's hot. And if they're – I think a lot of the luck that comes with being a free agent at that position is if there's no other options, then someone's really going to pay you. Because there are going to be teams really desperate.
Jonas, I think you make a great point about, you know, the marketplace. There's superstars at 10.5 at $10 million, and Vasilevsky at 9.5. And then, like, Hellebuck won the Vezina a couple of years ago. He's at, like, 6.5, 6.4.
Yeah, Markstrom got 6.
And those guys are stud starting goaltenders. Yeah. Demko signed the extension with a 5 in it, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's a fantastic goaltender. It's interesting what teams value are willing to pay. I always say this. You only notice goaltending when you don't have it. If you have it, you take it for granted. If you don't have goaltending, believe me, how many of these teams are like, man, we need a save. We need this and that. So I think it'll be very hot this summer as far as musical chairs, because if Billy Husso goes somewhere and all of a sudden Darcy Kemper goes somewhere, or Marc-Andre Fleury maybe, you know, is the first guy. I would love to see Fleury go to Colorado. I just think that would be a fit for some reason in my mind. Mm-hmm. But if that happens, then I think all hell's going to break loose, because you don't want to be the last team just fishing around and you know, picking at. And I'll say this. I was at the, you know, I was a scrap. I was a guy, you know, on that second and third wave got signed. So I know what the market and how quickly it can change.
Right. But so let's again bring it back into the Toronto Maple Leafs discussion here. Where are they at? Like, if they're playing the game of chicken with Jack Campbell, which they might be, you know, and that's fair game. I'm not saying that you overpay Jack Campbell. I don't know what the magic number is on him. But maybe their game of chicken is hoping that, you know, the market isn't nearly as strong as Campbell and Kurt Overhart are counting on it being. And the pull to stay with Toronto is strong enough for him, given what he's invested to this point, that he takes a lower number. But beyond that, what if he doesn't? You know, then what? Well, where are the Leafs going? You know, we can speculate on, maybe they try and trade for Barlamov, or maybe they do this, or maybe they do that. Well, they don't, you know, at least St. Louis has Jordan Binnington, and they're trying to re-sign Billy Husso. At least Minnesota has Cam Talbot, and they're trying to keep Marc-Andre Fleury as part of the tandem. What do the Leafs have?
Well, okay.
And how'd that work out for him last year, you know?
Right.
Well, he's going to bounce back, right? He's not going to be that bad again, right? Like, he'll be like,
are you sure?
He's going to, I don't know.
I think the biggest thing is health, Jonas. It's health. Yeah. That's the thing. The guy's
he's never healthy.
I think that's the thing that you start to look at. I believe coming into the Leaf contract, he had played like 26 games in like two calendar years. Like he hadn't been healthy. And then injured and nicked up, and then we saw what happened. We don't know what Peter Mrazek's capable of in a Maple Leaf uniform, because he wasn't able to consistently play for them.
Well, and I get it, and I agree with everything you said, and I am not, you know, beating down Peter Mrazek. But how do you go into the off season and a gambling year, and everything's a gamble. It's a gamble if you try and re-sign Jack Campbell. It's a gamble if you try and trade for a goalie. But if your gamble is Peter Mrazek getting healthy, and you don't have Jack Campbell signed, and now you're giving up more assets than you're comfortable giving up in a trade for a goalie that you're not sure is better than what you have, that's a tough spot for a team that everyone is expecting has to challenge next year. If they don't, then the guys making the decisions that we're talking about here won't be around to make the decisions. It's that simple.
Well, that's the reputation of Dubas, and one that he has promoted, that he's patient. And I remember him saying, I asked him, what's the one thing you learned from Lou? And He's told it to everyone. Well, Lou always told me, if you have time, take it. If you can be patient, take it. But has that patience helped him at any point in the negotiations of the big three? Did it help? I don't think it did. The negotiations of looking ahead to maybe trying to get Hyman locked up before he had a year, Campbell locked up before he had a year. Like, it can go either way. I'm sure there are examples of guys that they said, you know what, I don't want to give you the money, and then it worked out that way. We just don't necessarily know the details on that. But,
right. Like,
this is a scenario where, and I don't know what the contract was looking like last year. I don't know if Campbell's camp was even interested in talking. I don't know. I don't have the access to that info.
Sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just finishing my thought here, Dregs. Like, what if last year he was willing to take, you know, 4 years at $4 million?
But
and
Hayes,
he said, no, I'm going to wait.
You were willing to do that midway through last year?
I'm not saying midway through the year. I'm saying last summer.
You know, when like he played 20 games for you?
Well, now they're in a position where they probably want to take it now, and he's played more. Go ahead, Dregs.
I don't know the specific numbers. I think they were much higher than that. I don't think that the numbers that Campbell was seeking at early points of conversation were anything that Toronto was willing to do yet. And they wanted to see how the season was going to progress. That's why, you know, people are careful. You know, people who are in the know, both from the Maple Leaf side and player side, it's a game of semantics, right? And we've seen the reporting and we've done the reporting on, well, there really hasn't been much back and forth between the Campbell camp and they're not exchanging numbers yet. This is what, a week ago we saw all of that? Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that. That dates you back to the end of the season. So they haven't had any meaningful discussion or they're not swapping the parameters of what an extension looks like in the end of the season to maybe now. But there were numbers that were swapped early in the season and before the season that Toronto didn't like, just plain and simple. And I don't think it was 4 times 4. You know, and I know you're, Brian, you're just throwing numbers out
there. I'm just throwing
out
numbers,
I think they were higher than that.
I would argue Campbell's probably asking for more than he would have been last summer. That would be my guess. Is that he's got more leverage today than he would have last summer.
But I'm not sure he's asking for anything yet. I think that if I'm Kurt Overhart and I'm Jack Campbell, I'm waiting for Kyle Dubas. Like, Jack Campbell's a pending unrestricted free agent, right? He, you know, he could test the market on July 13th. It's up to Dubas and the Maple Leafs to present a reason for him not to test the open market.
Right.
And as of last several days, that hadn't been the case. Maybe that changes. You know, maybe it does.
Or maybe they've decided to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
But
maybe, Jonas, but where is that?
I don't know. Maybe there should just be a wheel and every team just has to spin it. And then you just go, you get Husso, and you get Kempfer. And
that would be,
that'd be
awesome.
A pretty good show.
It's the same thing. Like, you're really just rolling the dice.
Yeah, but what if you end up with Noodles?
Well, that's not good.
Noodles
that's
might be able good. To give me 905 for a year, right?
Stay suspended, can't touch my toes, 50 years old. It's not good.
Dregs, I did have just one non-goalie question for you. What is the market going to be like for Kadri? I think he's like such a fascinating free agent.
Oh,
like his age, his style of play, everything. Like, what do you think it looks like?
Yeah, it's tough to put a number on it, Jonas. I mean, multiple teams, obviously. This is his big contract. So you're age sensitive and you're term sensitive. I think there's a decent chance that Colorado is going to do what they can do to try and keep him. I do. I'm not saying that he's staying in Colorado. You know, I mean, there has to be a number and there has to be a negotiation. And I'm really reluctant to throw what that number is, because I'm not exactly sure, to be fair. You know, we're doing insider trading tomorrow, and I'm hoping to button down a better parameter on what that looks like. But I can tell by the buzz and the interest around Kadri, it's going to be healthy. And so if Colorado is the team, if they're able to make it work, it's going to be a challenge for them. It's going to come at the expense of others. But Naz is also at a point with his family here where the fit has to be right. And the fit is right in Colorado. So if it's not Colorado because the business side of it just can't work, then he's going to be really, really selective of where he goes.
Yeah, the big guys are going to take up a lot of the oxygen on July 13th, as they should, right, as they should. But there's more to go in. Like, even with the Leafs, you know, Spez is gone. I don't know if Simmons is an option to play every night. There's going to be other moving parts. Like, if they're bringing the big four back and Riley and Brody and Muzzin and Gio are back, there's got to be other moving parts with this team, not just goaltending.
For sure, but, you know, again, as you know, we kind of kicked Kyle in the shins, you know, a couple of minutes ago. You do have to look at the good that's been done, and the Giordano deal is exceptional. I can live with the Liljegren deal. You know, it's short-term. He has a lot more to prove. 1-4 for some was high. It wasn't high for me. I thought that was fair value. You're banking on the kid. And then you got to look at, you know, bringing Bunting in and Kasha and Kampf. I mean, that's all good work done by Kyle Dubas. There's a lot more to get done. And there are some contracts that are going to be super, super challenging. So we'll see. I'll tell you what, fellas. I know we got to wrap up here, but the buzz today has been terrific. And not just because of the Fiala trade to Los Angeles. I mean, that's obvious. But there is some stuff, not maybe Toronto specific, but Dubas likes to be involved too, right? And any team that's a cap team has to be willing to be creative. I think we could see some three-way scenarios here around the NHL in the days to come that are going to be fascinating, involving players under contract, maybe really top prospect players, and then the obvious draft picks with the draft looming.
I like to hear it. I want to see it. It'll be great. Yeah. We've got a couple of weeks here. Let's see where it goes. Thank you, Dregs. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota. And check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's Red Tag Days. Visit MapleToyota.com. Well, the NHL's got to keep up with the NBA. There's so much going on in the NBA right now with players getting traded, players opting in, teams declining options. Things are happening basically every 5 minutes.
Harden declined, but he's going to sign long-term, right?
Yes, he's declined his option, and he's going to re-sign to allow for flexibility so the Sixers can use a full mid-level exception. I think they're going to have room probably to add depth on the bench. So, yeah, that's happening in Philly. He's going to return to Philly, but he's not picking up that option, which was at a pretty big ticket. I would guess that means he'll scale back, but for more money in the long term.
Right.
But, yeah, that's happening in Philly. There, you know, a lot of people are expecting the Knicks to be very active, clearly. It's going to be a pretty wild couple of weeks in the NBA. It always is. But that's interesting what Dregs is saying, you know, and like with Dubas and company, it's not about – this is just presenting what has to happen. Like, I don't have an evaluation of anything because they haven't had the ability to do anything. Like, I'm not yelling and screaming saying they screwed up the goaltending position because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in 2 or 3 weeks, we'll be able to determine, or a month or two, whether we, you know, if I feel good about it, you feel good about it, and then we'll see it all play out. But
Do you think
this
the
is
point
just projecting what could happen or what's available to them right now.
Sorry, Hayes, I was just going to ask you, do you think it's – if you were them, would you just make an offer to Campbell? And if you would, what would it be? Like, I don't know. I don't know what you should do with that.
If they've determined that he's not their guy for whatever reason, then obviously those are the cards they're putting on the table.
Then you don't make an offer.
Obviously you don't waste your time, because what if he takes it if you don't want him? You know, and there's no point in wasting his time or insulting him with a lowball offer either.
Right.
Like, you know, he's going to UFA. You've talked around the league. His agent, I'm sure, has been honest with you about what they believe will be available. You can't go to him and say, can you take 2 years at 3.5? Like, there's no point in doing that.
No.
So,
I think what you do is you offer what you're willing to go to. And that's, you say, this is what we're looking at. 4 years at this amount of money, or 5 years, or whatever.
Take it or leave it, this is where we're comfortable. I agree with you.
I hear you, Jonas. I hear you.
Two years is like my max for like almost anyone.
Well, I know, but that's...
I know you're not going to get anyone then.
You're not going to get anybody. You know who you're getting? You're getting, you know, who's the guy?
You're getting a couple of backups.
But the left-handed shot who ended up in Arizona. What was that guy? Nick Ritchie. You're getting, you know, you're getting Kasha. You're getting guys like that on 2 years.
Frederick Anderson, 2 years, 4.5.
But he chose to. Yeah, Freddie chose not.
He doesn't play in the playoffs.
Right. He chose to go there and on a value contract. Like he said, he chose that situation.
Right.
Jack Campbell might end up choosing a situation that he believes. What if it's Colorado? Like, would you play – if you're Jack Campbell, would you sign a 2-year deal for $4 million a year knowing that you're going to have a boatload of wins and a chance to win a cup?
I worry about injuries.
I think if he had more money in the bank, he might. But, yeah, he hasn't made enough money, relatively speaking.
Well, they might call him.
What if Colorado offers him 4 years at $5 million? Would you change your mind on how you feel about him?
No.
Would you all of a sudden say, what does Joe Sakic know that we don't know? Or?
No.
No? Okay.
No. Well, what would be your reaction, guys? Like, let's say Campbell gets, I don't know, 5.5 by 4. And the Leafs sign, let's say, Husso, and they sign Husso for, let's say, 3.5 by 4. Will you be like, that doesn't make sense? Or will you say, well, they saved some money. Maybe he's good.
Husso, I'd have to rely on Noodles for your analysis.
What is Ville Husso? I do like him. I've seen him play a few times this year, but again, what is he at 27 years old, and can he be a guy to give you 50 to 60 games?
No idea.
And who's he playing with? I would be fine if it was Husso and another guy.
Are you getting Freddie Anderson? Are you getting?
Is it Varlamov and Husso? Is it who is it?
You get Vesetoskala. Right, you can use league history where it's the backup who you kind of like, and then is it like that's the
Driedger last year signs 3 by 3.5.
Yeah, but you're right, and Driedger was exactly
same
Ville
situation.
Husso.
Yeah,
but then Driedger didn't have a great season, and now unfortunately got injured overseas, and he's out this season. Period. Like it sounds like it's a 9-month recovery.
All right, we'll come back with role play level of concern. We'll continue with all of this. The Jays back in action tonight. A lot of NBA news. We'll keep you updated on that. We'll catch up with Izzy Gutierrez of ESPN a little bit later on. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, we're calling an audible at the line. Role play level of concern is going to happen at 6 o'clock. It deserves, an open segment, a long segment.
Yes.
And just to kind of tease where we're going to be going with role play level of concern, we're going to have the likes of Serena Williams, Kyle Dubas, Ross Atkins, Mike Trout, Baker Mayfield. All of those are going to be played in role play level of concern. That's in about a half an hour. I'm just seeing this article that the Grappler has sent us, courtesy of, I guess, CBS.
Yeah, I read that today.
MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred says the idea that he hates baseball is, quote-unquote, the most ridiculous thing said about him, end quote. Now, what spawned this was the whole lockout where Manfred, remember he got caught working on his swing outside of a meeting? He was in, like, a golf shirt working on a short game. That didn't help.
I thought it was the piece of metal.
That was the big one, which kind of resembles the it's a hall with some plaques in there. Comment, admittedly.
Your famous Jonas, you know this comment, right? Do you know this comment by Hayes?
This?
Well,
Mulls has it, and he'll play it, but
with some plaques in there. No context, as I raved about yesterday. No context. That's about the Hockey Hall of Fame and the sanctimony of voters. But again, no context to it, but it doesn't sound good.
It's a hall with some plaques in there.
Yeah, that's not good. That's very demeaning.
I heard your Hall of Fame conversation. I think you guys are right.
Yeah? About everything across the board?
About everything. I agreed with everything. I was nodding my head.
There you go. Thank you, Jonas.
Well, one of us, so there you go.
You're right. I mean, he called the World Series trophy a piece of metal, which that one didn't play well, right, in the baseball community. But
that has to be weighed against your Hall of
Fame.
That
one's way worse. No, that one's way worse.
I think you have to put it out there. That is an overdrive question.
Okay.
A piece of metal or a hall with plaques in it?
Go ahead, Grappler. Fire up the poll. We'll give it until 7 o'clock. You know, because it's our audience, the hall with plaque in it.
Oh,
it's going to win 99% of the vote.
It'll be awesome.
That's more disrespectful and tone deaf. And
anyway,
I mean, this guy's the commissioner of the league. He's calling the trophy, the World Series, a piece of metal. Like, what a stupid thing to say. But
I forgot about that.
I will say, I have never been of the belief that it is mandatory that the commissioner love the sport that they work for. Do, like, they're effectively the CEO of a company.
Right. When they're just businessmen.
They're business people. Like, Bettman had no affiliation with hockey. None.
Came from the NBA, didn't he?
He was a David Stern guy. And he got the job because Stern advocated for him and said, this guy is young, he's brilliant, and he will drive your business somewhere. Do you think Gary Bettman showed up and immediately was like, I love this sport? And I don't care if a commissioner loves this sport. What I care about is whether or not they grow the business. And
wait, is that you or you're the owner?
That's me as Brian Hayes, but also I would think even more so if you're an owner, Jonas.
Yeah,
I think even more so if you're the owner.
Money.
Yeah, but
money.
If you're a fan, so part of it with Manfred is also that he keeps changing everything. Like everything, it seems like, is on the table with him. And as a fan, I can say, I don't like that. Like, I don't like all these little things that they're messing around with. You do?
Well, I think some of them have been smart.
A runner on second base in extra
innings?
I'm totally
fine with that.
So
I love
stupid.
That in the regular season. Love
That's
it.
A joke.
Love it.
That's like the shootout, but worse.
So what? Exactly. It doesn't apply in the playoffs. It works in the – you play 162 games, and there's action. There's immediate action in the 10th inning. Oh. Immediate action. I like that rule. I have no problem with that rule. I like this new
pitch
rule.
Clock?
I like the pitch clock, although I don't know how diligent they are with it, but I like it.
Right.
I like the fact that you got to face at least three batters or finish an inning. That is one that I think old school fans really detest maybe the most. DH in the National League as well. But
I don't like that either.
See, I get no problem with that. I don't need to see a pitcher go up there and be an automatic
count. Yeah, but it's not just about the pitcher. It's about all the position changing. It's about the roster.
The strategy and the double change and all that.
Point is, if you don't like baseball, you don't really care about this stuff.
No, because these are specific elements of baseball. Like, I love baseball. I love hockey. I love football. I can give you five things from every sport that I love that I don't like and I'd like to change. It doesn't mean I don't love the sports. Like, you're allowed to, like, do you just love everything about hockey? Everything?
I see what you're saying. Okay, but like so let's say Bettman didn't like hockey. Who knows if he does? Like, do you think he's watching, like, Preds Panthers on a Tuesday night?
No.
Probably not.
Have
then
no
who
idea.
Cares?
Like, he probably doesn't know that they're playing. He wouldn't have looked at the schedule.
Doesn't
but
matter.
But you know what he's probably dealing with? The business side of hockey. And those guys are constantly putting out fires. They're constantly dealing with, like, when I was a player rep, we had lots of interaction, obviously, with the other side. Like, you can't imagine what the business of hockey it brings to their table every day. And it's not just, obviously, there's some negative stories that have come out and stuff like that. They're dealing with that on a daily basis, certainly. But it's owners. You're dealing with now 32 owners yelling and screaming about they're worried about their own organization. And you're right. It's not watching, who'd you say, Preds and
Preds Anaheim? Panthers.
Preds Panthers. But guess what happens? If something happens in that game, and one owner doesn't like it, or one manager, who's getting the call?
But then don't you want, I don't know if he, like, who knows if he likes hockey, but don't you want a commissioner who actually, like, is a fan and, like, likes the game and wants, like, look at all these examples
ideal,
of things where he,
I don't think it's necessary.
I don't know how this turned into Bettman, but I like it. But look at all these examples where there are these hot button issues in hockey, and every time you hear from Bettman, he just basically dismisses all of them. Officiating is not a problem. Replay is not a problem. Our playoff system is perfect. Like,
well, that's kind of the counter to Manfred and everything you were just saying about Manfred, where Manfred's expanding playoffs.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know, like, you're never going to get a perfect commissioner. But honestly,
what about Goodell? Like, is Goodell a former player?
No.
I don't know.
But
if
he looks
Goodell
like he's a big
football.
Dude. He looks like
I think he does.
He kind of looks
How
the look.
You know?
He's been working for the NFL since he was like a teenager.
But yeah, he may love the business.
Maybe that doesn't mean
it's
he
very
likes
lucrative
it.
For him, you know, but do you love the sport? Like, diehard fans are thinking, well, are you going to be up in the bleachers? Are you going to be tailgating? Are you going to be jersey guy? And I don't know if that's the truth. You know, like, if they weren't the commissioner, they could easily take over as the CEO of, you know, Nabisco
Pepsi.
Tomorrow.
Yeah,
exactly. Whatever it is. And it's like, all right, now guess what? Do they have to love that? Or is it just that they are qualified to run a business that is a massive organism and needs to be pushed in a certain direction?
I don't even know if anybody's ever gone down that road. Did Gary Bettman grow up a Rangers fan? Like, where did, you know, like, did he grow up? Like, that's the thing. And you would not want him to admit that because you see all the conspiracy theories right now throughout the playoffs. The league wants Tampa to win, so the refs are making calls. The league hates Toronto, so they made that call on Tavares in the pick.
We know that.
Like, We all know that. Like, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it would actually be better if Bettman is a lawyer. He's a very, every time you hear Gary Bettman speak, it's lawyer speak, because he's never going to give you a straight answer. Well, I know, but you're never going to get a candid answer.
You can never get a straight answer. You can never. He'll take your call. He'll come on.
Yeah.
It'll be cordial. And yet he is a trained lawyer, and he's also been doing this for 30 years.
And guess what the owners have done? Like, business has grown
a
boatload
exponentially year over year over year. And so I guess that, you know, getting back to where Manfred is at, I understand why he's defensive. He has to answer that he loves baseball. He has to. You can't say, I hate baseball, or it sucks, it's too slow. Like, you can't do that.
Do you like baseball? Nah.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You have to lie. And I'm sure he likes it to an extent. Does he have a passion for it? I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know him personally. But I don't think it's necessary at all. I wouldn't even think that's something that would come up in the interview.
Right.
Like, if you're the 30 owners, where is that on your list of questions? Do you love the sport?
Hi.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I think you should like the product, no?
I think you should
sell
the product.
I guess you're right. Like if you were the CEO of Pepsi, you don't necessarily have to like Pepsi.
You don't have
Pepsi.
To drink it.
Yeah, but if you're the CEO
whatever it is.
Camel cigarettes, do you have to be a smoker?
No.
You know?
Like,
you're literally hacking it, you know, like, God, I love the cigarette. Actually, I smoke Export A. I don't smoke Camels or whatever. I'm not a smoker, but, like, you don't. It helps to know the sport. It helps to know the product you are the CEO of. But I think Gary Bettman grew with it, but he got put into that situation because he's a brilliant businessman.
Exactly. And he had been shown the ropes by David Stern in the NBA and was prepared for the gig, was qualified for the gig, just like Goodell, you know, just like Adam Silver. Adam Silver was under the tutelage of David Stern. I don't know if Silver loves basketball. I don't know. I don't know. Does he have a hoop in his backyard? Does he shoot? Does he? I don't know. And I don't care. And I wouldn't care if I were the 30 teams. You know,
right.
It's, hey, where are you driving the business? Like, it's because of the title commissioner, you're commissioning over the sport. Really, they're the president and CEO of the league.
But
like, that's what they really are.
From the court of public opinion, is Manfred one of the least respected?
The least, if not Goodell.
Yeah.
Well, Goodell's
got such a powerhouse, though. Like, football's
exactly.
so
he doesn't care.
Popular.
He doesn't care. Like,
I think Manfred takes the most heat.
I think it's like Silver one, and then the others are all tied.
Silver's coming back to earth, though.
Yeah, he's had
really coming back to earth. Like, he was popular for a number of different reasons, but now he's starting to come back down to earth.
There's
he's
a guy
to change
that...
his approach in terms of giving the players everything, and he's starting to fight back.
Well,
in terms of allowing the players as much power as they've had under his reign as commissioner.
Does Silver love basketball? Like, is he
know.
In there, like, you know, he certainly enjoys himself. He certainly enjoys himself on the stage at the draft.
Yeah, he loves getting up there. I love the fact that they send the deputy commissioner out there for the second round.
Well,
like,
that used to be Silver.
No, I know that. But it's like, oh, the second round? Ooh, this is gross. This is beneath me. David, you can't stick
he's
around.
He's not a bird. He's gone.
He's
man.
Out of there after the first round. All right, we got role play level of concern in 15 minutes. Izzy Gutierrez of ESPN at 6:30. Jay's back in action. We'll keep teeing it up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, so Jim Edmonds, a guy you're familiar with, Noodles, back in your St. Louis days.
Yeah, Jimmy's great.
Great defensive center fielders of all time and big bat, made a lot of money, great player. He's
Jimmy do?
Well, he's in the booth as an analyst for the Cardinals. And do you want to hear? This is something you don't see too often. They must have a great relationship because the play-by-play guy absolutely sewers him because they're talking about Pujols as a DH and how tough it can be when you have to, you know, you get out and you got to wait like an hour till you get another at-bat, how difficult it can be to kind of keep your focus, right? And this was the back and forth during the Cardinals telecast last night.
I would imagine as a DH, that's the frustrating part. Kind of like a pitcher, you got to wait. You have a bad start. You know, it's 5 days you're going to be back out there. And then as a DH, you get that one pitch, hit it off the end of the bat, now you got to wait. That's no fun.
That's like, you know, when you, you know, you read things for so our old TV station versus our new one, or, you know, stuff like that just kind of flies out. You just don't even realize it.
Jimmy, I got to tell you, I have no idea what you're talking about.
That was like a Garth Algar. What the hell was he talking about?
I don't know what he was talking about. That's what I was trying to figure out. Jonas, did you?
Well, like, it used to be Fox Sports, and now it's Bally.
Right.
Yes.
But I don't.
I
got
to tell you, I have no idea what you're talking about.
But I don't know how that relates to
it. How does it relate to a DH? Like, I don't know, man. All right, we'll play that again. We got more tape. We got part two of Jim Edmonds just talking himself into a dangerous position. Final hour coming up. Role play level of concern. Jonas Siegel in here of The Athletic. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.